Heidi fucking ho, boys. This is Dana DiLorenzo, a.k.a. Kelly Maxwell from Ash vs. Evil Dead, and you're listening to The Horror Returns. Download that shit, motherfucks.
Greetings, victims. For those of you who delight in dread, who fantasize about fear, who glorify gore, welcome. You have found the place where the horror returns. Listeners, beware. This podcast contains major plot spoilers and the foulest of language. Join us in celebrating the old and the new, the best and the worst in horror.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Horror Returns. I'm Lance. We got Brian here. We got Philip here. And who is that? Is that Don Anelli, the godfather of all fucking horror podcasting out there? I'll lay down my sword for you, sir. What are we to do here tonight, Don?
Thank you guys for having me on. I heard we were taking a trip to my homeland. I figured you guys needed a certain Don to guide you guys through and give you guys a little bit of a protection. So
on this the day of your daughter's wedding.
we'll talk about that later, but I heard you guys were doing Italian horror. So I mean, if you guys know me and my last name, you know that that's a particular genre of interest of mine. So I figured I'd help you guys out and join in. I'd love to help you guys out.
We definitely appreciate it, man. So what's up with you, dude, besides promoting every single podcast out there day after day after day?
Right now, as we're speaking, I'm in the middle of Women in Horror Month. So that's always a lot of fun. Got some great interviews in. I'll be kind and I'll say some generous female-directed horror movies, but I'm more concerned about the interview, so I'm always glad to have the chance to give spotlights and shout-outs to all of the hardworking actors, writers, directors, authors, special effects artists, you name it. So I've got a bunch of them lined up and more to come. So hopefully I've got enough for the whole month. I haven't calculated that yet, so kind of a stupid move on my part. But I had at least 80 show interests, so I figured it was enough to get started at least. So, doing that, doing my usual podcasting work, doing my usual writing, and trying to find enough time to shit and sleep in between all that.
Outstanding. Love to hear it, man. What you're into exploitation big time, right? Exploitation films?
I can stand it. I'm not going to, seek it out, but if you show it my way, I'm not going to turn a blind eye to it.
So does this giallo, does this qualify? Would this be considered an exploitation genre?
There's a few that I would very easily label. Throw out a couple titles. Strip Nude for Your Killer, which will be for obvious reasons.
Okay.
There's other entries like The Sister of Ursula or Giallo in Venice. Those very, very, very heavily fall into the exploitation realm. The genre's openness with nudity, proclivity for violence, and just general seediness, you could very easily make a case that a lot of the other ones are in there, but those would probably be the big three. If you want to add a holy grail of Mount Rushmore of sleazy giallos, throw New York Ripper in there just to give you guys a foursome. But there's a very easily claims that you could throw a giallo in here. Some of the tamer stuff may not have as much of a case, but I think if you just lumped them in with some of the seedier genre entries, it's not very hard to see that they fall in line.
Very nice. All right. Well, that big brain on Don is why we invited you here, man. So definitely appreciate you showing up, and no rock and roll horror this week.
we're probably going to be looking at a little bit more classier and well-made productions. I'm pretty sure of that.
All right.
I'll definitely throw the well-made part in there. That's definitely a given.
All right, man. Well, let's kick it into high gear here, man. We start out with cool of the week. What is your cool of the week, Don, out of the dozens of movies for sure you've seen this week?
Man, that's a loaded question. Man, this has been real shit this year. Yeah, I haven't seen much of anything that's been good. I can say this right now. I've got a film that I rated 3 out of 10 on my top 10 of the year. So
nice. Night Swim?
Yeah.
I'm going to catch shit for that.
No. Night Swim's terrible. Yeah, that's still in my top 10 of the year. I'll say this. This is probably one of the oddest films that I found out this year. But it's kind of topical, and it's one that I actually just saw a few days ago, so I'll give a shout out for it. I normally am really good with pronunciations, but bear with me on this one. This is a tongue twister for me. It's called St. Patrick's Day, The Sluga Awakens. And I realize that. Don't blame me. They say the thing's name in the film like once or twice, and I cannot for the life of me figure it out. It's spelled S-L-U-A-G-H. And for whatever reason, my tongue just does not want to make those syllables work. So I apologize. I don't know what it is, but as the title sounds, it's a St. Patrick's Day horror movie. So it's a couple of friends. They're deciding to go on spring break, and they're going to go hiking in the mountains just as a, you know, fun little retreat. And they come across this small town where there's this legend of this beast known as, you've heard it in the title. Not going to try that one again.
Leave it at that. Okay.
It's the thing in the title. They hear stories about it being there. It's this beast in Irish folklore that supposedly followed the settlers over here and has been rumored to be in the area ever since. And they come across this guy who lives there that his wife was killed by the creature several years earlier. And he's determined to, one, prove its existence and, you know, track it and, you know, kill it. So eventually, you know, they team up, they, you know, realize that the creature's there, and, you know, traditional genre activities ensues. It's an indie film, so bear that in mind. It looks real cheap. It looks kind of, you know, real flimsy around the edges. But I had fun with it. I was kind of surprised with it. You know, the story, you know, it works for what it is. There's, you know, a little bit of a build up to, you know, with the first half, but when you get all the, you know, creature action in there, it's actually a little bit of fun. There's a, you know, a little twist in the second act that kind of takes the film off in a different direction. I'm not going to give too many spoilers, but it's one of those that I had more fun with it than I thought I would be. And it's not great by any means, but it's topical and it didn't piss me off. So I'm probably going to say that's the, one of the more surprising films of the year. Like I said, if you're into like modern, you know, indie films, like the crowdfunder stuff, then, give it a shot. If you also like, holiday themed St. Patrick's Day horror, it's topical for the holidays, but yeah, it's, you know, one of the better films I've seen this year, and that's not really saying much.
Ouch.
So, and we're not even at the part of the year that is going to have been impacted by the strike, so that's what worries me.
More to come, huh?
I hope so. I hope this year gets better, because we're... I've made this joke on several other shows. I've literally joked about turning Fresh Cuts into Fresh to Us, so...
Why not?
Yeah, but I guess that's kind of I'll leave it at that, just because, like I said, it's topical and it's one that didn't piss me off. So
that's two pluses right there.
I think I'm looking at the poster here. Tagline is "Blood Red is the New Green."
Yep, that's it. Okay. Jesus. Yeah, that's the demon thing. That's actually what the creature looks like. The thing on the cover.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
It does look interesting.
Yeah, like I said, if you're looking at the cover, that's what the creature looks like. The thing in the title, I'm not going to bother pronouncing. If you're into modern indie films, it's watchable. I've seen much worse. But topical, and it does get pretty good in the second act. There's a couple little twists and turns in there that kind of make it a little interesting. So if you're into it, especially for St. Patrick's Day, give it a shot.
Well, I'll jump in. I didn't watch a whole lot, but I did check out the new Adam Sandler movie, Spaceman.
Yep, check that out, boy. Too.
Yeah, I would bet.
I liked it.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest thing I've ever seen, and definitely not the best Adam Sandler movie, but I really love Adam Sandler. And I think he pulled it off in this one, and it was worth watching. Adam Sandler and Aliens, man. How can you go wrong?
It was more of a dramatic movie than sci-fi. Yeah, because I'm not going to spoil anything, but basically it's not just him being out in space so long so far. He's got issues that he is dealing with from back home that are kind of affecting him also. So that plays a big part of it.
Yeah, it was a lot more introspective than you would expect from this kind of movie. But it worked, I think.
Yeah.
Not too bad. That was my pretty good at the week. How about that?
I'll check one of those out tonight. Haven't decided which one yet. Brian, did you make it to Dune 2, Brian?
No, I've been busy the entire week. I'm gonna try to get to it this week. I've been hearing great things about it. I wish they hadn't spoiled the surprise casting. I don't know why they came out with the week before.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm not gonna say in case anybody hasn't heard. But
I was gonna say I don't know what you're talking about, but I kind of don't want to ask at this point.
Yeah. Nah, just go watch it.
Yeah, it would have been nice to see that person not knowing they were in the cast.
Yeah,
right. Makes sense. So.
But I also checked out Spaceman. I enjoyed it. I agree with Phil. It's not the best of the Adam Sandler dramatic roles, but it's definitely one of the moments where he's much more than just cheesy, dumb comedies where he's just getting his friends' paychecks and vacations. When he really wants to put in the acting work, he can do it.
Like, it's not as good as that basketball movie he did, but...
No.
Okay.
It's not bad.
So Brian, was Salma Hayek waiting for him back home? Waiting for him to come back home again?
It wasn't, that type of movie. He didn't have, the... Not to say anything about Adam Sandler, but he always, in his comedy, seems to cast, somebody that you could never see as his wife.
Yeah. There's no fucking way you got her, dude.
I believe it was Salma Hayek in a couple movies, and another one he had Kate Beckinsale. So. And...
Yeah, that's right.
And then the chick, he was tossing up girls between Jennifer Aniston.
And, Brooklyn Decker.
And yeah, and
Brooklyn. Oh, Jesus.
One of them, I was like, damn.
Why not?
Okay, you're not getting either one of those. How about that?
So after Don't Torture a Duckling, I needed to watch something a little bit more lighthearted.
Yep.
So I binged all 7 episodes of the Ted series.
Oh, nice.
All right, cool.
If you enjoy the movies, then I think you'll enjoy the show. I enjoyed the show. I didn't know how it was going to take because I just couldn't see this was supposed to be young Mark Wahlberg, the kid they cast.
Mm-hmm.
But he grew on me, and the comedy's there. I like the family dynamic because his family's like super involved in the show. It's just not young Mark Wahlberg or Johnny is his character in the show. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of the mom and dad, and he's got an older cousin that is renting a room there and going to college, and she's like the politically correct one, and the dad is the complete opposite. So you get a lot of comedy there, and very, very heavy on the Boston accents.
Oh, bad.
So
Thunder Buddies.
Do they get into that, Brian? The Thunder Buddies?
Yes, they do.
They have to.
You see the origins of it.
All right. Shit. Might check that out then. Fuck.
Yeah.
Anything else?
It's only 7 episodes, and I think they're like 30, 40 minutes long, maybe.
Okay.
So it's like a quick watch. I think once you like get into the first episode, you'll just probably end up binging it. That's all it right. For me. Ted and Spaceman.
That's two good ones, man. I'm gonna save Dune 2 for later because I'm not gonna take the low hanging fruit, but that's one good thing about the theater across the street. They show a lot of the big releases like that, but they show a lot of indie stuff too. So I got to throw some love to Stop Motion. Brian, you had us watch this trailer?
Yeah, I remember.
It's pretty fucked up. it's out there. And you can't really tell like what characters in the movie are real and which ones she's just seen, you know, because she's obviously going crazy through the whole thing. But there's one character in particular that kind of reminded me of the little Art the Clown girl from part two of oh shit,
Terrifier Art's gonna too.
Kill me, thank you. Yeah. So you've got a character showing up that I can't tell if that's like she's got a real domineering mother that's into stop motion animation, and she's kind of like taking over the business because her mom's got problems with moving things with her hands and stuff now. So I don't know. I think the little girl was her mom at a younger age. I'll let you guys tell me after you've seen it, but lots of great practical effects, lots of body horror. And what's not to love? A movie that's called Stop Motion, that about 1/4 of the movie takes place in stop motion. So go out and see it. Check it out. Support your little indie filmmakers. It's pretty cool. It's a trip.
Nice.
All right, Brian, news.
All right, start with the one TV news thing I found. I'm probably going to butcher his, I can't ever pronounce his last name, David Dalsmalchian, Polka Dot Man, Suicide Squad.
He's in we all love him. We all love him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, and him and Alexander Skarsgård, I can say that name. They joined the cast of Apple TV's new sci-fi series, Murderbot.
Huh. As promise?
Yeah.
Let's see. Movie news. Dakota Fanning set to star in Brian Bertino's Vicious. Brian Bertino is known for The Strangers. I believe he's directing and writing this one. Kiana Madeira and Jessica Roth will star in Mike P. Nelson's creature feature Titan. Okay. Anne Hathaway and Ewan McGregor will star in David Robert Mitchell, the director of It Follows, new mystery dinosaur movie.
What?
Mystery dinosaur movie?
That's a first, Don, isn't it?
All right.
Yeah, I'm intrigued.
Let's see. Jonathan Liebsman is going to be directing a movie called Wolf Night, and it's being described as District 9 by the way of The Purge, but with werewolves.
Wow.
And lastly, even though they haven't revealed any casting for this movie, they said they're going to start filming 28 years later, reportedly in May.
Hmm. Seems like it's taken 28 years.
And
kind of a thing, I guess.
And that's it. Slow news week.
Slow news week. All right. Don, where do you live, man?
I'm close to Los Angeles and San Diego. I'm like just about halfway in between.
Okay. Y'all got some white trash out there, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you'll be comfortable with us because Don, Brian is about to take us on a little trip down to the trailer park. We're going to bring you the big, the small, and sometimes the very, very weird. Kick us off, Brian. Help us out, man.
We're going to start with the weird. New A24 movie, I Saw the TV Glow.
Okay.
Two teenagers bond over their love for a supernatural TV show, but it is mysteriously canceled.
I hate it when that happens.
That is the plot of the movie. Directed by Jane... I'm going to apologize. I can't pronounce your last name, and you've commented on when I posted this movie. Schoenbrunn, she's the writer and director of We're All Going to the World's Fair.
Oh, okay. All right. That's going to be interesting.
Well, that shut my interest down a lot.
This star is Justice.
I can't help it. I didn't care for that movie. I thought it was repetitive.
I loved it or hated it. I got bored within.
Yeah.
20 minutes.
It's a great concept, but man, that thing is just repetitive.
Yeah, I don't think I ever actually finished it.
It had moments in there.
Yeah.
That I thought were generally creepy, but it was just moments.
Yeah, that's how I felt too.
Let's see. This stars Justice Smith, Bridget Lundy Payne, Ian Foreman, Helena Howard, and others. Don, we're going to start with you.
It's okay. I mean, it's not really giving off like truly horror vibes. It's giving me horror adjacent vibes.
Yeah.
I mean, the concept isn't really grabbing me. I think it's one of those where it's probably going to, you know, gradually become horror over time. Images look fine, but I'm really not feeling a lot of genuine genre from it. It's probably one of those where this is probably like the closest genre it falls into. Like, you know, A24 usually does where it's uncategorizable, but this is like the closest thing that it falls into.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a new movie to watch. We're probably going to end up covering it on Fresh Cuts. So, I mean, I guess, but not a high priority. And I'm not really a big fan of A24 anyway. So we'll see. But I don't have high hopes for it.
Phil?
Ooh. I usually, if it's an A24 movie, it's at least, I think, going to be decent-ish. I sort of feel the same way about, like, the AFC Midnight stuff, or IFC Midnight, where it's like, you know what, if they put it out, it's at least probably worth a watch. But yeah, it doesn't give off a whole lot of horror vibes. I'm not entirely sure what's going on. But they're real good about like not giving it away in the preview. So
I will say that
may not
you
be
really
a terrible thing.
I will say that they are one of the best at not being able to figure out what type of film it is.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
They do a good job with, you know, not giving you like the, you know, it's not the movie in 2 minutes. It's, you know, they usually do a good job of trying to get you interested.
Mm-hmm.
I will give them that.
So, I mean, it may very well suck, but it's got at least a shot at being decent.
Lance?
Now, this trailer really grabbed me. I'm excited about this one. This looks like something that we've never really seen before. And so just for that alone, I'm willing to give it a shot. But the visuals to me looked really stunning. And a lot of I've recognized a lot of the young actors and, you know, it's people that I've always enjoyed and other things they've been in. So I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it, but it's not high on my list. I did like the visuals, but I just got the feeling I'm going to have the same feeling as when I watched her first movie, the we're all going to the World's Fair.
Let's hope not.
It's going to be moments in there that interest me, but most of the time I'm going to be checked out.
Yeah, that one was like very evidently like low budget. This one at least looks like it's an actual movie.
Yeah, got a little support behind it, right?
Yeah.
This one is due in theaters May 3rd.
Moving on
to the second trailer. This is from M. Night Shyamalan's daughter, Eshana Night Shyamalan, and that is The Watchers. Lance, you can put this book on your book list, based on The Watchers by A.M. Shine.
Okay, adding it right now.
Let's see. 28-year-old artist Mina gets stranded in an expansive, untouched forest in Western Ireland. Upon finding shelter, she unknowingly becomes trapped alongside three strangers who are watched and stalked by mysterious creatures at night. It stars Dakota Fanning, Georgina Campbell, Oliver Finnegan, and Olin Foray. I think I pronounced her name wrong. But there's going to be a lot of that tonight.
It's okay. It's all right.
Lance, we'll start with you.
No, this looks interesting too. I mean, you get two trailers so far, two positive reactions for me. So I'm excited about this one. Looks very interesting.
Bill?
Dakota Fanning is one of those where, like when she first came out, I was like, oh, okay, well, this girl is special. And so just the fact that she's in it alone makes it worth a watch for me, because she's a really talented actress. So hopefully it's good. We'll see.
Don?
I'm on board. This sounds great. Concept is intriguing. I love the locations. The setup is right up my alley. And I actually don't mind the cast. I think it's a pretty fun look. You know, let's see what the daughter has. I mean, she can't be any worse than her dad at his worst. So,
ouch.
True.
I said at his worst. I never said he's a bad filmmaker. I just said at his worst, she can't be any worse.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, she's directed a couple.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, she did a couple episodes of Servant, which were kind of a couple of the standout episodes. So I've got high hopes. I know she's a singer, too. She's done a lot of music for Servant and some other things.
His other daughter.
Oh, in that case, rewind everything I just said. Is this not the one that directed a couple of his episodes of Servant?
It is. I didn't even know he had daughters, but I guess he has one daughter that's a director and another daughter that's a singer.
Oh. Keep the money truck backing up, right, Philip?
There you go.
I think the term is nepotism, but we'll carry on.
But yeah, I'm with Don. I like the concept. I'm very interested to see what the creatures look like. Why are they trapped in this forest? Were they selected to be trapped in this forest? How long has this been going on? Just a lot of questions I have about the story. So,
yeah, there's a lot about this that I like. It's the right kind of mystery that I can really get into this one. Right there with you. I think this is probably, not to spoil anything, I think this is my favorite of the three.
Nice.
This
one got a little bit of delay. I don't know if that was shown in the trailer, but it only got delayed a week, so it's now, the new date is June 14th.
Okay.
And our final trailer, The Strangers, Chapter 1. The first of three already filmed movies, all due out possibly this year. Let's see, synopsis. Maya drives across the country with her longtime boyfriend Ryan as the pair begin a new life together in the Pacific Northwest. Along the way, their car breaks down in Venus, Oregon, and they are forced to spend a night in a isolated Airbnb home. Through the night, they are terrorized by three murderous mass strangers. Now, this is directed by Rennie Harlan, who's done movies like A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, Die Hard 2, Cliffhanger.
Deep Blue Sea, come on. Where's his masterpiece?
Sorry. let's see.
Shark ate me.
What was that, Don?
I thought you were kicking it to me. Sorry.
I was about to. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I don't actually like the first Strangers all that much. I'm not a huge home invasion fan, so it didn't really work for me all that well. But I did like the second one. Not, you know, it's like a classic or anything, but I did like it. Hey, my opinion. Knock it off. You'll have your turn. I liked it, but I'm not like, you know, gaga over it. So I mean, it can't be any worse. Concept is okay. Looks like the killers look a little bit more intimidating. I hope to God we don't go with one of those because you were home kind of motivations. I understand that's terrifying and it's more realistic, but it just doesn't work for me. I need genuine motivations, and that was one of the reasons why I didn't really like the original that much. So my hopefully we get that, but it can't suck. It can't be worse than the original. It sounds okay. And, you know, if this is a genuinely planned trilogy, it can't be, you know, like the Exorcist trilogy where they've committed to it. And well, we saw what happened with the first part.
They've fully committed to this one if they've already filmed all three.
That's what I'm saying. If they've already filmed all three and it was planned from the very beginning, that could potentially sway me a little bit towards it. But color me intrigued. I'm, you know, in the middle. There's some reservations about it, but it's a new movie to watch. So medium to bordering on positive interest for me.
Yeah.
Phil. Yeah, so is it this is a trilogy movie series and it's not a TV series?
Yeah, it's a movie series.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm sure it'll make money at the very least. But yeah, I have a little bit of the same thing going. Like, home invasion movies are not my favorite because I wish some crazy motherfuckers with knives try to break into my house. That's going to be a quick movie, I'll tell you that. but, yeah, it looks all right.
Yeah, I'm into it. I agree with Don also. Again, the first one's not my favorite. I'm more of a Strangers Prey at Night fan. The second one, I thought it was just a fun movie. And it got outside of, the first one was all confined into one house. And the second one was an entire trailer park. So I thought it was more fun. And Rennie Harlan, he makes fun movies. And I think he may have directed all three movies. So sounds like they had a plan for the trilogy, unlike the Exorcist trilogy, where they were just going to go do the Star Wars thing and just go by movie instead of just having a complete storyline planned out. So,
but how far can you go with this storyline? So far, they've all kind of been the same thing.
We're just going to have to see because I'm putting it on the schedule.
All right, fair enough.
Lance, how much did you hate this trailer?
Are we really going with this trash again? This is like one of the worst fucking movie series ever. And you got Rennie Harlan? How big of a fucking money truck did they back up for this asshole to direct all three fucking movies and film them all together? Give me a goddamn break.
We are making a list of directors that will never, ever be on this show.
Jesus Christ. This is going to be hot garbage. I can tell you right now. It's going to be horrible. Start to finish. All these movies suck. I don't want
to be fair. To be fair, do we know that he actually did direct all three, or is he just responsible for the first one?
That was just my opinion, that he might have directed all three.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I haven't heard anything about him actually doing all three. So that could just be, you know, they're having three different directors, or maybe he'll do the first one and then they'll take somebody and they'll do two and three.
Yeah, it's very hush hush on these movies. The only thing it,
I mean,
the only thing that's been said is sorry, Don. Go ahead.
I was gonna say I can understand Lance's trepidation if he does direct all three. If your feelings for him are that strong, but if we don't know for a fact that he's actually done all three, then I think that could be a little overblown. I can understand the reaction for part one, but I don't think it's fair to write off all three if we don't know for a fact.
I think they should make, like, the first two movies, like, really intense, like, home invasion things. And then, like, the third one, he breaks into the wrong house and gets shot, and that's the end of it. I think that would be great.
I'll tell you one thing. This movie, if this and I Saw the TV Glow came out on the same day, you guys already know which one's getting my money.
And we know which one's Lance giving his money to.
I guess Lance ain't with us anymore. So we'll move on. This one is due in theaters May 17th. Matter of fact, is that close to the... Oh, a couple weeks after I Saw the TV Glow, so...
All right. Well, hell, we'll jump on it. Why not? All right, we'll move on to... That was the last trailer, right?
Yeah, and I'm just going to say, I got to talk shit because Lance is not on the mic right now. If we wasn't going to do it, he'd bring up, why aren't we doing the new horror movie this week?
Probably. Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. You know me too well, Brian.
Yes, I do.
All right, we'll move on to a little bit of listener feedback. This week we shine the podcast spotlight on Scream Sister, a podcast diving into scary / crime movies and books hosted by two Latina sisters fighting every natural urge they have towards introverted hermit crab mode. I don't know what that means, but that sounds awesome. Regarding the announcement, we're happy to announce that Jessa Daisy, Jessa Flux, as a cast member in Deathwoods. She has starred in films such as Murder Size and Slumber Party Slaughter 2. Mike Batchelor says, that's To Be Tuesday award winner, Jessa Flux. And Colin Kirsten says, yes. Yes, it is. regarding the original Freddy, Simone Baldini says, that glove is wonderful. Still not as good as... with the third one, fucking Dream Warriors. Yeah.
Which one was this for?
The original Freddy.
The original Freddy.
Yeah. Good design though.
I think we had a comment about someone saying they were talking about New Nightmare was the best out of the franchise, and
what?
It's near the bottom for me. To be honest.
Regarding 28 years later, Ruben Caballero says, I don't know, the whole zombie apocalypse is still played out now. 28 years later, and all of these corpses should have been rotted to nothing. The science behind it.
Skeletons, huh?
That is a good point.
But they're not zombies.
Another good point.
That's probably what makes them last for 28 years. They're not zombies.
Oh, I guess so. Just some weird disease. although I guess if your brain rots for 28 years, it's probably not going to go well either. Regarding the Crystal Lake, Texas show, Jared Witte says, you can't do a prequel to the series. Jason was a little kid and not a killer, and his mom wasn't a killer until her son died.
This is going to be in Texas?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Okay.
It says Crystal Lake. Oh, it's probably TX show and not TX show.
Oh, okay.
That would be really interesting.
And so one of the people that commented is just a concept poster.
Okay.
It's not an actual poster. He got kind of bent out of shape. That is, called it a fake poster. And the show was supposed to come out years ago. And I was like, it was just announced last year. Let's calm down.
Yeah, somebody's getting a little out of control there.
could be cool. I mean, obviously his mom was a psychopath, and I imagine
from the day
that didn't bode well for him as a child. But we'll see.
Now, okay, good, good. Let me ask a question here. Don, are you a fan of the Friday the 13th franchise?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Lance is not.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my answer.
But Lance is a fan of A24, and it sounds like you're not. That's who's involved in this franchise. Where do you guys see this series going?
I don't watch TV series. I don't watch genre TV series, so.
Okay.
Oh, no. Nothing at all.
I don't have the time. I've got too many movies to watch.
Yeah, that's true. I can see that. I can see that.
It's too much TV now.
Yeah. Some of the stuff I've thought about getting into, but everybody seems to... They like it because they're a fanboy, not because it's a genuinely good stuff. Like, it's genuinely good.
Mm.
Like, everybody I know of, it, they seem to like it just because, well, okay, you know, you've got this actor, you've got this studio, you've got this... you know, platform, you got, you know, so-and-so involved. And it's not like, you know, everybody says it's a good show because it's a good show. It's a good show because this person's involved. This isn't, you know, they like it because they're a fanboy, not because it's genuine. It's a genuinely good show. And so it's kind of hard for me to figure out like which one's worth investing in. So I just don't bother and stick with movies.
Hmm. Okay.
I would say, Don, if you're going to check one out, I would say go with your fellow Don. And watch Chucky, because Don Mancini's done a lot of great, admittedly, fanboy twists, okay? But it's a very well-done show.
Cool. All right, yeah, that was one I was looking at. I also wanted to try out the Flanagan stuff on Netflix. Those are like the two I'd probably want to give a shout-out to.
Fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, the
Flanagan
does it's, yeah, like that, like I said, like those are the ones, the two that I'm the most intrigued at. But like I said, I'm much more of a movie guy, so I probably will want to get to them sooner rather than later. But it's not one of those where I'm in a rush to get to.
Okay,
fair enough. Okay. And speaking of Dream Warriors, regarding Nightmare on Elm Street 3, David Downs says also love that the music score was done by Angelo Badalamenti, who would be much more known after his work with David Lynch and in particular, at least to me, in Twin Peaks. Okay. Nice. 80s movie podcast. Working for Lloyd Kaufman and Troma was one of my favorite jobs. Sharing cab rides with Lloyd was regularly a highlight of the day. That's pretty awesome. 80s movie.
No kids.
Thank you. Yeah. And that's it for listener feedback this week. As always, our intro and new logos come from Steve Carlton from The Geeks. So be on the lookout for some more great stuff from him. And of course, our original skull artwork comes from Natsulani. Check her out on Instagram. And help us out. Become a Patreon patron. We'll let you pick the movies for a future show at any amount. And for $5 or more a month, also pick a commentary for a future bonus show. So, appreciate that, guys.
Real quick, Phil.
Yeah.
What game is your daughter playing?
Fucking Gorilla Tag.
She's really into it.
Yeah. She is so stuck on Gorilla Tag. I can't get it.
Okay. I just want to know. I just see her in the background, just all over the place.
Yeah, she's tried to show me a few times. It's harder than it looks.
Yeah, I tried it, and I almost threw up, Brian.
Yeah,
it's like so much movement, like VR movement, is like had to take the headset off.
Yeah, there's a few of them that'll do that. All right, on to featured attractions. This week we go into the world of exploitation again with Giallo films. The Bird with the Crystal Plumage and Don't Torture a Duckling. And Don't Fuck with Cats. We'll start with The Bird with the Crystal Plumage.
Thank you. Ed, tell me about it, eh?
What's that?
What happened? I want to know everything you saw and heard. Everything.
Monica. Come on, now. Come on.
Take go of me. I'm Alberto Ranieri. She's my wife.
Excuse me.
Monica, speak to me. What happened?
He's untiring her.
Monica. Oh. Dear, who did it? Who?
From 1970. An American expatriate in Rome attempts to unmask a serial killer he
witnessed. But was he? Because he kept trying to get home the whole time.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know why they let him be such an integral part of this investigation.
What is he supposed to be? I thought he was a writer.
He's a writer.
Oh, okay. An American expatriate is what they... Anyway, witnessed in the act of an attempted murder and is now hunting him and his girlfriend. Director is Dario Argento, also known for Deep Red and Suspiria. Writers are Dario Argento and Frederick Brown. It has been alleged that Tony Musante, known for his intensity and preparedness as an actor, would frequently show up at Dario Argento's apartment at 3 a.m. to discuss characterization, much to Dario Argento's annoyance.
Completely high on cocaine.
Yeah. Dude, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Go the fuck home.
He was great in that one TV show. You guys ever see Oz?
Oh, yeah.
It's been a while.
He played like a mafia don that was in prison.
Oh, huh. Speaking of Oz, there's another cool of the week. I finally watched Shot Caller.
Ah, that's a good one.
With Jamie Lannister.
Sister fucker. Yeah.
Jamie Lannister, sister fucker.
I forgot his name for a second.
Pretty good movie. I'm not sure I really got it, but it was a fun movie to watch.
Yeah, it was cool to see his transformation from where he... how he came in to where he ended up.
Yeah, I guess he just kind of got caught up in it and stuck. I guess. I don't know. It was like, what is your motivation here? Shouldn't you have just, like, you know, done your time and got the fuck out?
I think it was the choices he made in there, kind of. one bad choice kind of steered his life this way.
Yeah. but yeah, so the bird with the crystal plumage. Don, what'd you think about this one?
Well, first of all, I just want to give out a quick little correction. Frederick Brown is not a co-writer of the film. He's the writer of a film called The Screaming Mimi, which is a film that Dario unofficially adapted for the film.
Oh. Mm.
It's been alleged that Argento used the book as a framework for the film. It's very, very similar. And so he didn't technically write it, but he's the writer of the book that the film is unofficially based on.
No kidding. That's why you're here, Don, to correct us.
So they gave him a little credit, but he didn't actually do it. Sort of.
Right, yeah. that was one of the compensations. Yeah, this is one of my all-time favorites. It's probably, I would say, Argento's weakest masterpiece. I put it just behind Deep Red, Suspiria, and Tenebrae. Those are my top three, my holy grail. And this one's just a notch below. I think the mystery in this one is just absolutely splendid. Everything in here is just, it just connects together so wonderfully for me. I love it. The twist is just absolutely spot on. I love what it does. The stalking scenes are brutal. This is just a really, really, really fun time. I actually really don't even think that there's much of anything wrong here. I mean, you know, the American dub is probably, I would say, like the biggest misstep here because everything just sounds like shit. I mean, the voice that they give to the one artist, the one that he visits in that he has to climb up the ladder to visit. I mean, the dub to that thing is just hysterical.
That guy's hair was amazing.
It was, but his voice sounds like god awful. But yeah, it's one of Argento's best. I still think it's one of the best debuts ever in the history of the genre. It sets the template for the genre going forward. You realize that the genre beforehand wasn't really... Giallos before Bird with the Crystal Plumage weren't murder mysteries like what this one is. And, I mean, you know, we can talk about that later, but the fact that every film afterwards pretty much copied this one, not just in presentation, but every other film afterwards... Every other film afterwards tends to have either a color, an animal, or there's three things. There's like a color, an animal, or some kind of like action involved, and they all come from they all come from this one, just to showcase like how popular and how groundbreaking it was. It's hard for me to, say anything bad about it, because, I mean, there's not a whole lot here that's really bad. So, yeah, classic film, one of my all-time favorites. Absolutely love it.
When did the black leather gloves become a thing?
It started with Blood and Black Lace from Mario Bava. That's the first one that ever used it, but that was just a coincidence. There was never really anything planned. It was just one of those where there's a scene where they showcase the killer. He's trying to grab a disguise, and he grabs black gloves because that's the only thing around him.
No kidding.
Yeah. So it wasn't anything that was really planned. It was just coincidence. Bava said that it was, the actor just brought in gloves one day because they needed a scene where the killer was supposed to... grab a disguise real quickly. And so it was just supposed to be something that was laying around the set that the guy could grab on to, conceal his fingerprints. And so he had him bring in, his own gloves to, save money on, having to shop around for it. And so he just happened to bring black leather gloves one day, and that's what they used. It was just a complete coincidence. I struggle to say costume, but it's kind of appropriate. It's the only term that really fits. The black fedora, the white mask, the black trench coat, the black gloves. It starts here, but it doesn't really become official until all of the ripoffs start doing the same thing, because it's one of those where, because they're attempting to copy it, everybody's doing the same thing. So it's not really one where everybody agrees and says, okay, let's just do it. It's just, well, they did it. That's what they did to make their film popular. Let's do that. So it wasn't until like a lot of the ripoffs and, the follow-ups came out that they started doing the same thing, that's kind of where it started from. But it was just one of those where it initially started in Blood and Black Lace, and then it just kind of carried on because everybody was just, okay, Bird with Crystal Plumage is popular and it made a lot of money. Let's just rip that off and try to make some money ourselves. And because Argento did it as well, I don't remember if I ever heard the reason why he did it. Like I said, I know Bava did it because he said, okay, we need a scene where the killer grabs a pair of gloves to hide his identity, bring something from home. And we can, it'll just be one little quick scene where you see like the killer putting the gloves on, so we know that that's what he's, we know it's him. And it was just one where he happened to bring black gloves that day. So that's kind of where it started with that one. But I don't recall why Argento chose the black, but it was just one of those where he did it, so everybody just started copying him, and it just sort of carried on. It just became part of the genre as a cliche going forward.
Until OJ.
Yeah. But I will say that Argento did do it again afterwards in Giallo, so it's not like OJ kind of stopped it, but story for another day.
Those weren't his. Did you see how they fit on his hands?
Oh, I know, right?
He must have quit.
They got all shrunken after they got soaked in blood. That happens, I guess. All right. Brian, what did you think about this one?
I have not seen many giallos. It's kind of a blind spot in my horror movie watching, and I have to say, every time I see one, I'm becoming more and more of a fan of this genre. I love this movie. I thought it was fun. I love the twist. The main character, I just love the whole storyline. He had nothing to do with the murder, but they're going to take his passport, and he's just like, fuck it. I'm going to do your job for you. I'm going to do the investigating.
True, yeah.
Suddenly becomes the lead investigator on the fucking scene.
No shit.
Like, damn, they really trust this guy.
Yeah. All the stalking scenes were just giving me just creepy feels, just the way they were filmed. And everything just worked. Everything just kind of just made me feel, I think, the way the movie made me want to feel. With the one scene where the killer's like, right before he stabs the one girl, like he's undressing her with the knife, and it just made you feel just kind of just gross. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, the twist at the end.
Crime thriller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I can talk about that in a few minutes. That's an excellent observation, Phil.
Okay.
But that sort of seems to be what a lot of these do, is this, you know, crime drama thing, which is cool.
Like I said, I can talk about that in a few minutes.
Yeah, and then the movie just capped it off as just a cherry on the sundae was the cop that came with the karate chop on our killer at the end to disarm.
Judo chop.
It was a legit judo chop.
Straight up.
I was just like, I love this movie.
Lance, what'd you think?
I was bored out of my mind. I mean, for one thing, you don't even have an actual murder until an hour and 10 minutes into the movie. Don, how do you explain that?
Like I said, it's a crime drama. I'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, just not my cup of tea, guys. I wanted to enjoy it. I wanted to appreciate the historical significance and everything, but I don't know, man. Starting from the beginning where you got the guy trapped between two glass walls, why don't you just break the fucking glass and get to her? Well, instead of waiting an hour for the fucking
cops. You can't break the glass.
It's security glass. It's security glass.
All right. Well, you got me on that
one. Break it with what, Lance? His fist?
How inept are these Italian cops? I mean, really? That you got to have a fucking quote-unquote expat from America to come in and be the white savior? And save the day here. Come on, really?
The white savior in Italy.
This was not my favorite movie we've seen this year, and we've seen Night Swim, Don, so you know.
Well, you gave Night Swim a high score than all of
us. I gave it a 6.
That's like a 8 from us.
Yeah, okay. I mean, they had a decent twist at the end, but I don't know. I gotta pass the baton. Phillip, what do you
Don,
think?
Don, you're going to have to like assign him some giallo homework because we reviewed Tenebrae and he hated that one also.
I don't remember hating it.
I remember everything you hate, Lance, so I can use it against you.
We got a list. I enjoyed it. I like a good crime drama, and this is like sort of the origins of the crime drama, you know? It's got like a little bit of that film noir thing going with the, yeah, see? You know, that. And, but it's in Italy. And, and so they're solving crimes, catching murderers. It always seems to be the unexpected female villain, but.
Very, very, very misogynistic too. By the way,
yeah,
very
I don't sexist. Know how many like female serial killers there actually are out there, but they're definitely in the minority.
Well, could the gay character have been a little less flamboyant? I mean, really?
This is in like 1970 too, man.
True. Yeah, it's a product of its time.
He was also like the fashion guy, though, right? So, sort of makes sense.
I guess it makes sense.
Like, if I'm taking fashion advice on a suit, it's probably going to be from that guy. I liked it. I thought it was a pretty good movie. I always liked the whodunit thing, and there's something about that whole genre that pulls me in. And I don't know that I realized that's sort of what giallo is, because I had always just envisioned it as this, you know, goopy neon red blood artsy horror thing, you know. And a lot of them seem to involve these, you know, just crime thrillers. And I liked it. I thought it did pretty well.
Yeah, actually, crime thrillers is where the genre started. Real quickly, for those that are unfamiliar with the genre or the term or whatever, first of all, the term giallo is literally the Italian word for yellow. That's basic. Okay. It's the direct translation. That's what it is. And it evolved from a
practice.
Yeah, it's the Italian word for yellow. All right. So it's the exact same thing. When you say yellow in Italy, it's giallo. Regardless of whether you're referring to the genre or not, it just means yellow. It's exactly what it is.
All right.
Unless you're Cosby. Yeah. But the association with the genre is due to a practice that evolved in the 20s and 30s where with books, when books were published in Italian markets, there was a color that was printed on the jacket. And it was basically like the jacket would be a solid color. You'd have a picture or like a drawing or some kind off in the corner, and you'd have the title on the top. But the majority of the book jacket would be this one solid color, and it was color coded. So each of the genre, each of the colors was related to a specific genre. Red would be comedy, blue would be history, green would be something like, you know, there'd be like different colors and different genres. I don't remember exactly which one's which. But when murder mysteries were first introduced, they were given a yellow jacket. And so the reason is that in Italy, the color association is suspense or shock or fear. So we as Americans, we have the color yellow association as bright and sunny and happy. In Italy, the color association is shock or fear or suspense. And it's what they use that to denote murder mysteries. Your Agatha Christie's, your Sherlock Holmes, Hercule Poirot's, all of those were printed in yellow and were printed in Italy with yellow jackets. And when the films adaptations started popping up in the 50s and 60s, the association was the closest thing we have is the murder mysteries. We'll call them giallos. That's where the term comes from, is because that's the closest thing that they had, because it was basically evoking the same memories that the books had been published under back in the 20s and 30s. So wow. That's where the connection comes from, is because that was the closest thing that they had was they assumed that the novels were, that the movies were being based off of the novels that were being made. And a lot of the times there was phony adaptations, like they would invent backstories and say, oh, well, this is based on, you know, such and such giallo novel. You know, it's a very rare copy, but we were able to find a copy of it and we based our movie off of this book. It's a very phony practice. There's not a lot of it. It was just basically to make the movie look more prestigious than it really was. And so that's where the association with the term actually comes from. They're films based on the novels. But when you look at what the 60s giallos are, they're not the stalker body count type of, you know, slashers that we see, like, you know, Bird with the Crystal Plumage or, you know, some of the other stuff that comes out, like Black Belly of the Tarantula or Who Saw Her Die, you know, like those kinds of giallo films that came out in the 70s immediately after this one. When you look at giallos of the 70s, they're basically adaptations of Les Diaboliques. If you've seen that movie, you know, it's basically, you know, a person going crazy. the psychological manifestations and how they, you know, unravel and, you know, like all of that that goes on over time. That's established in the 60s genres. That's not where the genre was. It's not slasher films. It's psychological thrillers. Now, where Phil comes in with the crime drama aspect, that's due to Blood and Black Lace. When Blood and Black Lace was released in Italy, it was not a hit. But in West Germany, it was a hit. And I'm saying West Germany specifically because if you know your history, you know it's West Germany, not Germany. But in West Germany, Blood and Black Lace was a hit. And Blood and Black Lace was established basically with elaborate crime, with elaborate kill sequences. So
and when it was they, good Germany and not the bad Germany.
Right. West Germany is the good Germany. Yeah, West Germany is the good Germany. So when Blood and Black Lace was released, there was already a line of films made in Germany called Creamies. Creamy is... It's spelled C-R-I-M-I. Don't get your mind in the gutter.
Okay. Yeah, my mind went right there.
Yeah, I know. That's why I spelled it out, because I know where your mind went. It's spelled C-R-I-M-I.
The Germans have some weird shit.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, it's spelled C-R-I-M-I. And like giallo, it's the German word for crime. So giallo is Italian for yellow. Creamy is the German word for crime. And that's what they... These creamies were in Germany. They were crime movies. It was basically the kills that were, you watch those films, they were just basically a kill that introduced a detective. And you watch the detective unravel the crime. That's why they called them creamies. So when Blood and Black Lace was introduced, they started upping the ante and they started putting more horrific murders into their movies. And you see the later 60s, you see more graphic murders, more graphic, you know, exploitation elements. Mm-hmm. By the time you get to Blood and Black, to Bird with the Crystal Plumage, the West German influencers in the film asked Argento to incorporate those elements into the movie. So he's making a murder mystery in Italy based off of German ripoffs of the Italian movie Blood and Black Lace.
There it is.
And that's why we invited you, Don.
History lesson in giallo.
Yeah, there you go. So yeah, the giallo that most people know of is an Italian adaptation of West German adaptations of an Italian genre film.
Ooh, feel like that the more you know music should be playing right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's basically the genre in a nutshell. And that's why I was really impressed that you picked up on it being a crime thriller, because that's where the genre started from.
That sort of seems to be what a lot of these giallo movies are. Even when they're not, they kind of are.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Scores. Don, what do you think?
Flat out 10 for me. Classic.
Ooh, wow. 10. Brian?
Go 8.5.
Okay. Lance, low man on the totem pole.
I'll go 5. It's right in the middle for me. there were some decent, you know, scenes, some good filming, but I don't know. I found it rather boring. I don't know if that's just because I'm so desensitized with all the horror stuff that we watch all the time, but anytime you got to get the quote, I'm using my air quotes here, the expat and to solve the crime, that's problematic for me.
I didn't get expat. I got writer.
Yeah.
Wasn't he a journalist?
I think that's a bad description you read, Phil.
I think it's pretty much, I think it's a, you know, one of those, it's just sort of been co-opted, you know, over time. I think it was just a misguided rumor that just sort of became fact.
I gotcha.
Yeah, I don't know what it's called, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go, I think, 7.5 with this one. I enjoyed it. Like I said, man, I always look like a good crime drama. Like, I'll watch these all day. Even if they're foreign language and a little cheesy.
Well, let's get into that. Why was everybody speaking in English? Don, you said it was all dubbed, huh?
Yeah. So at this time, a common practice in Italy was to shoot the film silent. This wasn't just in giallos. This is practically any film out there. You would see this in spaghetti westerns. You'd see this in, traditional horror movies, dramas, comedies. You'd see that practically everywhere. It was not just restricted just to giallos. Basically, the idea was because you had international casts. So you would have actors from England, you'd have actors from, Germany, you'd have actors from France, from Spain, from Italy, from the U.S. Is such the case with, the later film we're talking about, Don't Torture a Duckling. Two of the actresses are from South America. One's from Brazil, and I think one's from Uruguay.
Oh, that makes sense.
The casts were not all speaking one language. The idea was to then, let's just, not waste time. Let's just make sure that we get the emotions down and we can dub it in post later on. So what's going on is everybody's filming their scenes and they said that the trick was that everybody counted off how long their line was. And what they don't actually speak anything. They're just speaking out in their language how long their line is. So if one guy says, my line is going to take 5 seconds, he's counting off 1, 2, 3, but he's like gesturing like what's going on. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that as soon as he's finished counting his lines, that's my cue to jump in. So they're not speaking their lines. They're saying, my line is 5 seconds. I'm counting off 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And that's, my part of the scene. And then it's, we'll dub the voices in later. So in various markets, they would have them, they would come in for the ADR. What they would actually be doing is they'd be dubbing their lines over for their native release. So the Spanish people would dub their voices over for when the film would be released in Spain. The French actors would dub their lines over for when the film was released in France. And, the Americans would dub their voices over for when the film came to America.
Well, that kind of makes sense because it almost didn't look like they were actually speaking another language. It just sort of looked like their mouths didn't quite match up.
that's what everybody always, speaks about these is that the lip movements don't match. That's what they're doing. They're not actually speaking.
That makes sense.
Yeah, they're not speaking lines at all. They're just counting off in their language what they're just however long that particular line is in that scene. They're just counting off how long it takes for them to how long that line would take to say if they were actually speaking it. But they're just saying they're just counting off in numbers and then they're going over later and they're dubbing their voices in.
OK. That explains why two Italian cops were speaking to each other in English. I get it now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that brings us to our next movie, Don't Torture a Duckling, from 1972.
It was a child of the devil.
I told you.
Captain, are these merely superstitions?
I don't know.
Peppino, no one's ever been killed because of magic.
No one. It's all nonsense.
Who's that?
Ah, she was born here. Her father made a fortune in the land.
Come on. I won't bite you. I'm coming.
Apparently, she was implicated in a drug scandal a few months ago. I don't know any of the details, but her father seemed to think she'd better stay here.
When a southern Italian town is rocked by a string of child murders, right up my alley, I love these movies, the police and two urban outcasts search for the culprit amid scapegoating with superstitious community. Director is Lucio Fulci, also known for Zombie and A Cat in the Brain. Okay. writers are Lucio Fulci, Roberto Giavitti, and Gianfranco Clariti. Did the best I could. None of the main cast are actually Italian. Florinda Balkan is Brazilian. Thomas Milian is Cuban, Cuban-American. Barbara Boucher is German-American. And
if you click on her name on Wikipedia, it says Nazi Germany.
Oh, well, there you go.
clicked on her name.
This is 72. And Irene Pappas is Greek, and Mark Perel and George Wilson are both French. So, all right, what did you think about Don't Torture a Duckling, Don?
This is one of my all-time favorite movies. This is in my top 15 of all time. I love this movie to death. I think it's fantastic. I think the setup is amazing. Brian will get a kick out of this. In the immortal words of MJF, fuck them kids. I think the setup is fantastic. The whole idea of taking a giallo out of this, you know, city and putting it out in the rural countryside, I think that's just absolutely ingenious. There's just so much to play with. This whole idea of intolerance and bigotry, the way that the outsiders treat everybody there, the way that they treat themselves. I think it's just, it makes for a fantastic storytelling. The kills are just amazing. The gore is fantastic. The score, the scenery, it's just amazing. And one of my all-time favorite nude scenes in the history of the universe. I think this movie has it all. I love this film.
With the 12-year-old kid?
Yeah. Fun fact, that's actually a, I believe the correct term now would be little person. That's how they shot that sequence.
I had no idea.
Come on, Don.
It just looked like a kid.
No, it's a little person. I think that's the correct term.
that makes more sense.
Yeah, that's how they made it.
Boy, they just jammed this sucker right into a scene that he was ready for, huh?
I would have been ready for it. Shit.
All right. Brian, what'd you think?
I agree with Don. I love this, and that might be one of my favorite nude scenes. The redhead seducing the little person. Now I know doesn't make it as creepy as it was before.
She was ready to fuck that 12-year-old for sure.
Pouring the orangeade. Is that what she called it?
Yeah, orangeade. Yeah. That's right.
I did not know where this movie was going. This movie had more twists enough to make M. Night jealous of this movie. There was twist after twist.
Just I'm sure he's seen when it,
you,
right?
Yeah, as soon as you thought somebody was the killer, was going this way, the movie went another way. And when you get to one of the scenes where the townspeople went full Evil Dies Tonight on somebody,
right?
I didn't see that coming.
Better movie than that one, though, that's for sure.
Yeah. And then when we get to the finale, I was just like, when I'm trying not to spoil it. Even though it's an old one, I really don't want to spoil it. But when we get to the mountaintop scene, I really thought it was going to go all bad for a character.
Yeah.
And not the character that it did. I thought somebody was going to get thrown. And this movie just kept me guessing on the edge of my seat the entire time. The practicals and the one scene when the townspeople attack somebody was good.
Yeah.
The kids looked like they were legit dead in this movie. Like they actually murdered children for this movie. Great movie. I think I'm gonna keep this giallo train running because like I said, every time I watch one, I'm just entertained.
Yeah, totally different little subgenre there. Lance, what did you think about this one?
Yeah, this was a lot better than the other movie. So, oh my God, all my schoolboy fantasies were being realized there when she was saying, why don't you stay here? It's like, holy shit, I would have fucking jumped at the chance.
Of course.
And that was a little person, Don?
Yeah,
really?
I was a little person.
Well, little persons need love too, so, you know, I'm all for it. But yeah, gorgeous women in here. Not just her, but the witch. Is it Bruja? Is that Italian too, or just Spanish for name for a witch? You guys may not know.
I think it's Latin in general. I think other language. I think it's okay. One of those where I think the Latin countries kind of just adopted it just because all of them are similar. I don't know if there's a definitive one that started it. I think it's just one of those where it's a Latin word, and I think all of the, you know, Spanish, French, Italian, just because they're all so similar, I think they just kind of adopted it.
Was definitely Mexican. Wow. Do that.
this movie kept you guessing the whole way. And anytime I see a priest around a bunch of young boys, I immediately, like, my spidey sense goes off and I don't trust that priest. But that aside, they kept you guessing who it was going to be. And then, yeah, that final scene, like, that almost brought tears to my eyes. The little girl that was not quite there and the peril she was in and who she trusted and who she didn't trust. And very, very well made movie. Much, much different to me than the last one. Sorry, I didn't like the last one as much, guys. Not trying to bring the party down, but this movie had everything in it. It had everything. Just incredibly well-made movie. And you guys know that I love, horror that takes place out in the woods and stuff like that. And, you know, like Don brought up, this takes you out of that urban, you know, setup or whatever. And it kind of brings you out into a small, although was it really that small a town? Because how many fucking people showed up every time they announced the new
beautiful scenery, beautiful location.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a good one. This was a good one.
Yeah, especially in that crime drama category, I like catching the bad guys for really bad crimes, like killing kids, right? Like, that sounds
no
terrible.
No right? Telling what else he did, right?
Like, I really like watching movies about killing kids, but nah, not like that.
you like the justice part of it.
Yes.
We get
like,
it.
Law and Order SVU is definitely my favorite Law and Order series. And this sort of was like that, but before that. And even before the whole priest drama, I mean, this was in the 70s. But still, gotta watch out for that dude, right? You never know. I enjoyed this one. I thought it had it took the whole crime drama thing a little more seriously than the last movie, I think, and had more twists and turns. Like, this could easily be made into a modern day movie.
M. Night's probably already trying to get the rights.
Yeah. And I enjoyed it. I liked the witch. I kind of wish they had delved a little more into the whole black magic thing. Like, it was sort of a side plot, but they didn't really go into it. They just sort of dismissed it. And like, I think had they played on that a little more and explained it some, it could have been very cool. But either way, I think it was a pretty good movie, man. I was pretty impressed.
I think they did enough with that to make you think it was going that way.
Well, yeah. But then, like, when it didn't, it was just, I think, all right, we're just going to forget about that plot line.
Well, they kind of brought it back because there was another character that had books on the subject, so you were thinking that was connected. So I like how they were kind of throwing you this way and your expectations this way, but it was really going another way.
Yeah, they were really kind of dangling that carrot, but the problem is they dangled it and then pulled it back and then like didn't really give you a bite.
Didn't you bring it back.
And I thought had they delved into the whole black magic thing and made that, even had they made that actually been the issue, I think that would have worked. But okay. I'm still pretty happy with the ending. I think that worked out. Although, you know, some of the physics in that last scene probably didn't work out, but that's okay.
All forgiven because of a dummy death. I give extra points when you have a fall dummy.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a great dummy too. And that head crushing on those rocks over and over again.
The sparks.
The sparks.
I'm like, you know what? I don't even care.
There's your black magic, Philip.
All right. Any final words on this one before we give scores?
No.
All right. Don, what do you think? 1 to 10.
10.
Another 10. Right, Brian, what do you think?
I'll give it an easy 9. I think this is my favorite one so far that we've talked about on here.
Pretty good giallo. Lance, what do you think?
My favorite so far, too. 7.5.
7.5. I'm going to go 8 on this one. I think it kept my attention. And I kind of wish that I had gotten to put a little more attention into it. Like, I may go back and watch this one again.
You mean the Red Hood, Philip, specifically, or?
Just in general.
Okay. Just checking, movie,
man.
Was Donald Duck free domain at this time or something?
I think point. In Italy you're allowed, but they have a different name for them in Italy, don't they, Don? Like, they have a they had comic books that came out and everything else. I can't remember what.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I don't remember offhand. If you would have asked me for extra research, I would have been able to be prepared. But yeah,
El Tropo or Popo or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
Something. Yeah,
I'm a Disney buff, so
yeah, that sounds familiar. Maybe that's where I've heard it from. You may be right. I think that's what it is. But without looking it up, I don't know for sure. That does sound right.
Okay.
But that does sound right though.
Okay.
Yeah, but they called him Donald Duck, and it wasn't, like, obvious that he was, but...
Right.
I think it worked.
He just said, my name is Donald Duck, and I don't give a darn.
The Duck Don. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, here it is.
Uh-oh.
Paparino? Paparato? Yes, I don't know if I said that right.
El Popo or something like that. I think they lovingly call him.
A paparino is the Italian word for duck, though.
Okay.
There you go. Don't torture him, Don.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I guess that's where the name of the movie comes from.
Yeah, paparino is the Italian word for duck, though.
Okay,
cool. Learning all kinds of stuff tonight.
Yeah, knowledge.
All right. Any final words?
Yeah, just Don, where all can we find you now, man? You're all over the place, literally.
Yeah. I do my Women in Horror Month series, as well as all my usual reviews and write-ups. You can find that on Don's World of Horror and Exploitation. You can find that at donshorrorworld.blogspot.com. I have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, if you want to follow me under my name. Pretty easy to find there. And I am involved in, there's technically two, but if you really wanted to be, pedantic, there's three podcasts I'm involved in. The main one is the Horror Countdown. Me and a guest, we pick a topic and do a top 10 list every episode. So no movie reviews, no in-depth discussion. It's just a top 10 list on, whatever topic we want to, discuss. We can, I've done episodes on, werewolves and vampires to, female revenge movies, or I think the latest one I released at the time of recording was Scariest Smiles. So, you know, wide open topics, you know, a lot of to discuss. You can find that pretty much everywhere you find podcasts. I got to get used to stop saying Stitcher. That's usually my usual thing. But, you know, Apple, Spotify, I think Google Podcast is still available.
Yeah, it's going away in the beginning of next month.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I know. I got to stop with that one, too. Got to figure out what other podcatchers out there. But if you search around on the main sites, you'll find it. It's Horror Countdown. The other two shows you can find on the No More Room in Hell feed. They're both sidecasts of No More Room in Hell. One is called Fresh Cuts, which is a weekly look at the biggest release of the current week. So streaming, VOD, theatrical, what have you. And the other one is called Creature Comforts, which is basically just looking at creature features, one movie at a time. So, like I said, you can find those both on the No More Room in Hell feed. But yeah, other than that, like I said, you can pretty much find me under my name. I'm, like you said, I'm everywhere. So,
well, dude, we're super honored to have you join us this week. It means a lot. So thank you very much, Don.
Thank you guys for having me.
So as always, we want to thank you guys for listening to another episode of The Horror Returns. We would love to hear your feedback and ideas. Thanks to Brian, you know where to reach us. And I think next week, is it March Madness? Brian, we're a little up in the air on that, or what's... pretty sure we got a March Madness coming.
I do not even know who is all on the involved this year. I know one person.
I hope to keep it that way because I want to be surprised, but we'll see. But guaranteed we will be back next week as every week. And shit, I guess there's nothing left to say. But Brian, until The Horror Returns again.
Good night.